Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome along to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Now, to begin with in a few moments, the Nearby Business News Desk with myself and Dave, where we discuss some of today's business headlines.
And this week we'll be joined shortly by local estate agent Ronan Crinian to take an in-depth look at what's happening at the moment in the local and national property market.
After that, I go down memory lane as I take a look at the history of some of Dublin's department stores of the past.
After that, Conor Burke is here with this Business Week in History.
And finally then, Leanne O'Leary from the HR department is here for our regular look at HR issues. And this week, as usual, we look at them from the employer's point of view. We're going to chat this week about the new auto-enrolment pension system recently announced by government. So, looking forward to that. Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or indeed comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air. The number is 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or indeed, you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
News Desk on Nearby Business.
So welcome along to the Nearby Business News Desk, and we're going to look today, Dave, at some of the business headlines. Interesting one from fashion retailer Penneys. They're going to have to raise their prices.
Yeah, if you like getting a few bits of the old budget fashion chain, Primark will raise prices as it battles severe inflationary pressures. Its parent, Associated British Foods, said yesterday as it warned on the margin outlook at its food businesses. The warnings sent the company's shares lower than previous. The group said Primark, which trades Penneys here, has been unable to fully offset the cost pressures it's facing with savings, so will implement selective price increases across some of its autumn winter stock from August only. Finance Chief John Basson told Reuters that Primark was keeping its pledge not to raise prices for spring summer stock. He declined to say what the magnitude of the price rises would be for autumn winter. He said, "We absolutely ensure that we are the best value around, and that's not going to change." Arrival Next said last month its prices would raise by 8% this year. The pricing moves underscore the balancing act the clothing industry is facing as it struggles to protect margins without denting the demand amid the biggest squeeze on household budgets for decades. Now, Primark sales increased 59% to £3.54 billion in the first half of March to March 5th as COVID restrictions eased in its markets.
Yeah, challenging time for all retailers. Now, despite all of that and despite the inflationary pressures, Davies are upbeat on Irish economic growth.
Yeah, it's upgraded its growth forecast for the Irish economy, one of the only forecasters to actually do so, despite the negative impact of the Russian invasion on Ukraine and the higher energy prices which are around. The company said it expected the economy to grow 8.2% in gross domestic product in terms this year, up from previous forecasts of 7.6% and 5.8% by 2023. The upward revision reflects what it described as an erratic 5.4% drop in output across the multinational sector in the final quarter of 21, which is expected to be revised in the first quarter of this year. It noted the industrial production, which is dominated by pharmaceutical and meditech firms here, was up 15% in the 3 months to February. The Department of Finance, Central Bank and the Economic and Social Research Institute have all downgraded their forecasts for the economy on the back of the war in Ukraine and the energy prices shock which we are experiencing at the moment.
Yeah, it's hard to know where it'll end up, but Davies are upbeat, which is good. Now, an interesting initiative by Bord Bia. They have targeted US bartenders and liquor stores.
Yeah, cheers. Bord Bia campaign is the single largest investment the agency has made to date in the promotion of Irish spirits. Ireland's food promotion body Bord Bia has launched its new Spirit of Ireland drinks campaign in the US as part of the Irish government's trade mission to North America and Mexico. It's the single largest investment by Bord Bia has made to date in the promotion of the spirits area. The educational program is aimed at US bartenders and liquor stores that sell Irish spirits. The campaign, valued at €750,000, comprises of virtual reality tours of 20 of Ireland's distilleries, featuring interviews with master distillers and barrel coopers, so staff can learn firsthand from brand owners in Ireland what makes their product unique and distinctive. Participating distilleries include Irish Distillers, Blacks of Kinsale, Clonakilty, Killarney, Dingle and Tipperary. The campaign will be rolled out in 17 liquor-controlled bars boards in the US and the government agencies that regulate the sale of alcohol beverages at the wholesale and specific level in the United States.
What a great idea.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest tool and technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
I'm joined now by local estate agent Ronan Crinian of movehome.ie to take an in-depth look at what's happening at the moment in the local and national property market. Very good evening to you, Ronan. I believe you're a busy man at the moment, just conducting some viewings, yes?
I am indeed. Hi there. I have just an evening viewing, an open house viewing up here on the Whitehall Road. Beautiful old period house and strong interest in it. But we're noticing that the viewers that attend viewing are only ones interested. They're not tire kickers. They're the, we'd say, shorter or lower numbers, and they're the ones that are the most interested. And out of the three people that came tonight, two of them have expressed an interest and bid on the property.
Right.
So it was a good evening.
Right. Generally speaking then, that shows you're kind of distilling down in the silo of buyers or whatever down. Generally in the market at the moment, how are things going? How would you describe it?
Oh, we've never seen it before. Okay, there's a shortage of stock level or supply by about 50 to 60%, right? And it means that normally I would have between 40 to 50 properties on the market at this time of the year. I'm only down to about 25.
Right.
And the ones that are selling, David, are the ones that are in very, very good condition. And it's because of the shortage of supply for, like we say, woods and steels and the costs that have increased on refurbishment, that people are bidding excessively, all right, on properties that are in good condition.
It's amazing. I suppose the trying to get a good contractor as well is something that could take you 6 to 9 months at the moment with the demand of. I see locally in Dublin 9, 11, and Dublin 5, there's a lot of skips around, a lot of hoarding up around houses, a lot of refurbishment going on. Family houses are staying in families as well, I think. Is it happening?
They are, yeah. A lot of people over this lockdown have decided what to do with their house or if they're going to move. And because there's a lack of supply at the moment, then a lot of people are staying put in their houses and they're making the necessary renovations or extensions or attic conversions to the properties. So that's what they're doing. They're trying to get the house to suit them as the family grows and as their needs change.
We hear a lot in the news in the last day or two about repurposing of buildings, particularly publicly owned buildings. Now, I know this isn't your particular area. Have you seen anything in this area? Will that help to alleviate the demand, or is it just going to be soaked up by possibly refugee people coming in looking for places and also homeless people being homed? Do you think this will have an effect, or will it just be soaked up into the ether?
I think it's going to have an awful effect on the market because we have thousands. I won't give an exact figure, but like there's many thousands of homeless Irish, all right, and that's before we get the people from overseas, and particularly the Ukrainians who are going through like a national crisis at the moment, and they have to be housed. God bless them, and we have to assist them in some way. But it's a challenge when we can't assist our own and house them appropriately, that we have to take on more at the moment. So there is going to have to be necessary, fundamental change, and that has to be quickly. And I think the Minister Brian is looking into that and is going to redress Parliament this week on it. So we're all waiting to see. But we in the business just can't see how both the homeless and the people from the east are going to be housed in Ireland.
In terms of commercial property then, just taking a step to the left of what's happening residentially, commercial property including retail and... we spoke last time, you said that there was a, you know, particularly you took an example of the Drumcondra Road and how that was kind of panning out and mostly full, very few properties. How are commercial sort of retail property markets going at the moment?
They are getting back on their feet, and there's a number of changes in the market as opposed to, you know, like the high street. There's new brands, okay, that are starting up that have made probably their name online, and there's more cafes. Okay, but yeah, the old traditional markets are going to change. As you're aware, I have an office on Cable Street, and Cable Street is in the news today.
Yes.
That's going to sort of be pedestrianised, right? And that's going to have a fundamental change on the street, because I walk down the street every other day. I get chatting to local traders there, and there's one man who is like a locksmith, and he sees no future in his business because he'll lose out on passing trade. There's people then that need cars to access it for carrying paint and things like that. So
yeah,
is it going to shopping centres? But that the high street is still sort of changing, and it does every decade. But it's getting, let's say, more popular at the weekends as opposed to Monday to Friday.
And I'm not trying to be controversial here, but the mandarins in Dublin City Council are sort of saying that the motorists are proving particularly resilient to our efforts to pedestrianise and cycle lane the city. I'm a cyclist myself and I have a car, but you know, we have to all live together and we have to get to work with tins of paint and pieces of machinery and do all those things. We can't go everywhere on a bike, you know, and we can't walk everywhere either, but maybe some people don't see beyond that
don't. But the good thing is at least there'll be a time to allow them, okay,
yeah,
access the street. And it would be very, very important to define that time.
Yeah.
And then everyone can work around it. But I think businesses will suffer that need sort of people to assist, you know, like with their content. Because there's one or two furniture shops on that street.
So yes.
People can't carry them. They need vehicle access.
In terms of the buy-to-let market then for landlords, a lot of people, the last time we spoke as well, the market had kind of been a little bit deflated because of regulation and, you know, all the business of registrations and tenancy boards and all that sort of thing. People were kind of saying this isn't worth it, one or two accidental landlords, people were getting out of it. How's that going these days?
It's going well. There's an issue with the supply in that particular aspect of the business, all right? It is, rents have gone up like 10%, and there's still people like wanting to move around,
mm-hmm.
Okay? But we're noticing in the business, David, that there's a lot of landlords that are losing interest and selling up.
Yeah.
And we think it's about like 10% of the overall market supply every year that it's dropping. And that's because people are just finding that the rent caps in certain areas that can only go 4% and they might get caught with a bad tenant, it's a low rent, and it's just not viable to them. So when they put it on the market, if a property like an apartment or an investment property comes on the market and it has a low rent, it's 9 times out of 10 an owner-occupier that's buying it. So it's great that it's giving a supply to the owner-occupiers.
And what about the sort of super guys that are coming in, the super, let's say, landlords or, you know, the guys who are building large blocks? I'm speaking about one we know in Dublin 9 there has recently been built.
Perfect Avenue.
Yeah, it's only to let, and the prices are pretty juicy, the rental, I believe, coming in there.
They are, yeah. And I believe if you want a pet, you can have one, but then there's an extra charge, etc.
Yeah.
So it's an extreme example of the capitalist landlord market,
mm-hmm.
and it is an example to us all, because not everybody can afford to live there, and it's just normally, we say, couples, right, not less with kids, but the young professional couple that might be both earning X amount, but are not, well, that are living life to the full because they're not saving, because a lot of their income goes on a rent, and the rents will be about 2,300, 2,500 there,
yeah,
for a two bedroom. So they wouldn't have much money then to save for a property, so they will be buying later in life.
Well, they may be transient. They may move to the States or Australia or whatever in time, you know, or they may be working here temporarily for one of the multinationals. I suppose that's another market that they're fulfilling.
There is. So there'll always be a market because there'll be others that will be coming from overseas. But I think we have enough property to rent here for the foreign nationals or the people moving around, like the Irish, etc., for professionals. We do need more, like, long-term lease properties.
Yeah. Now, just you mentioned earlier on that you had your new branch in Capel Street, and we all are familiar with the wonderful window you have in Drumcondra Road, and I'm sure the Easter Bunny was jumping around it there in the last few weeks. Unfortunately, I didn't get to that side of the road recently. I've been going down the other one mostly, but it looks really well.
I took him down last night, the Easter. It was a little bit long overdue, but I only got a chance to do it yesterday evening.
So what's next? What's next in the window?
The next one is, I think it's the most popular, and it's about 300 teacups.
Right.
And it's like drop in for a cuppa, or we love proper tea, as in proper T-E-A. And I'm going to do that, and we have like, teacups that, or teacups from houses that we've sold with about 300 or 400. So I'm going to get a few people to help me at the weekend, and they were lovely teapots in the shape of houses. So we'll get the graphics done, and we'll do that next week.
So are you fully operational in Cable Street?
Not yet, no. It's going again before the courts at the end of May. So the earliest I'll probably be granted access and permission to trade in it will be the end of June, beginning of July.
And just you've got a new piece of property coming on the market in Drumcondra Road. You mentioned about there's going to be a student accommodation coming there with retail. How's that going?
It's going very well. I've agreed terms on it, and I have agreed terms with a an English Isle of Man company. Okay, they're joint owned, and there's an Irish influence on it, and they're looking. They have about 100 million to invest in Dublin.
Wow.
And they're looking for student accommodation.
It's going to comprise some retail onto the street there as well.
A coffee shop. Which we don't really need in Drumcondra because I've just done a deal with the coffee shop two doors up, and there's enough places to get coffee in Dublin, but in Drumcondra, so I don't think we need one. But look, that's up to the developers to see what they want to do. But I think terms have been agreed just at the asking price of 3.7 million.
Right, and Pret and Manjé are arriving in Dublin as well to open, or in Ireland, and they're going to open two branches. If anyone familiar with London will know, they're sort of a similar to Insomnia kind of thing. They have a similar brand, even colour, and they will be opening more coffee shops, so we've plenty of coffee.
And you know what worries me is that if the market drops, it's coffee shops that are the first affected because people watch what they spend.
Yeah.
And if they're spending €5 a day in a coffee shop, that's an extra 25 quid a week or €100 a month, that'll be the first to go. And that's just what's concerning me about if a recession hits, and that is going to change the high street again. I do think things are going to level off in the high street over the next year or two, and if there is a dip in the economy and like reduced spend, well then there's an awful lot of retailers that won't be able to survive that and have to cut back.
Yes, the coffee and the nails, I think, are the first to go, are they? Maybe not the nails. Well, not my nails.
I wouldn't be a nail expert. I chew mine.
Okay? Oh, very good. Very
with
good.
Worry and concern about the market.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us. Appreciate that. And Ronan Crinian of movehome.ie, we always appreciate your input onto the programme, and thank you for talking to us. I think that's probably the last time I talk to you in this season, and we appreciate your input over the last few years on the programme. Ronan Crinian of movehome.ie, Drumcondra and Cable Street, thank you.
A pleasure.
Yeah, very interesting, Dave. Lots happening there in the market, lots happening here on the north side as well, locally, and no better man to tell us about it.
Yeah, and he's great. Just has a great touch about the whole thing, and he knows exactly what's happening on the ground, and he has a very big group of contacts there, as he mentioned, that big Isle of Man company who are opening are developing there on Drumcondra Road next to the Ivy House, and there's already a building there, and planning permission has gone in for development of student accommodation adjacent to St. Patrick's College with a retail front. So there's a lot of student accommodation situation around town. Yeah. Actually improved a lot of areas, Church Street, Dorset Street, on all servicing the Dublin University campus at Grange Gorman and Bolton Street and everywhere else like that. So there's plenty of requirement for it. They're not cheap, these places to stay in either, but they're well serviced and they have communal areas for people to sort of live in and communicate with each other, and probably have a beautiful Ballymun, actually. There's a great one in Ballymun which is called Aspen.
Saw that.
And they have a really good new sort of for the want of a better word, sort of a cafeteria cafe underneath it, which is an independent operation. But I went in there for a coffee one day and the breakfast rolls were flying out of the place. So
excellent.
It's all happening, but there it is. That's what's happening in the property scene at the moment, straight from the horse's mouth.
Now Conor Burke is here with This Business Week in History.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hello and welcome back to this week's edition of This Week in History, the segment where I talk about one important event that happened in this week in the past. On the 26th of April 1956, Ideal X, which was the first modern container ship, set sail from New Jersey to Houston in Texas. Built by the Marine Ship Corporation during World War II, Ideal X, originally known as Petrillo Hills, was later purchased by Malcolm McLean's Pan-Atlantic Steamship Company in 1955. And then the ship was modified to carry shipping containers and was rechristened the Ideal. And during her first voyage in her new configuration, she carried 58 ships from New Jersey to Texas, where 58 trucks were then waiting to load the cargo. And in 1959, the vessel was bought by Bulgarian owners who renamed Ideal X the Aylmer. The Aylmer suffered extensive damage during bad weather on February 8, 1964, and then was in turn sold to Japanese breakers, and she was finally scrapped on the 20th of October in 1964 in Japan. What Ideal X did changed the way goods and products were transported all over the world forever. The invention of container ships allowed the world to become more connected and has allowed companies to sell their products in multiple countries throughout the world. Even to this day, the majority of our goods are carried on 20-foot containers on these container ships, which is with the largest ships being able to carry up to 23,000 containers. The reason that container ships have remained such a popular form of transport is because they are cheaper to run than planes, but can also carry enormous amounts of goods. The Ideal container ship, which was taken apart for scrap after only 9 years, modern day container ships can last to 20 to 30 years. But there are some downsides to container ships though. As you all probably saw and heard on the news, the Suez Canal was blocked for a number of days in 2021 and caused major disruption to trade all over the world. The Evergreen ship became blocked in the Suez for 6 days on the 23rd of March. The ship blocked one of the busiest trade routes in the world and stopped approximately 330 ships from passing through the canal. Finally, when the ship was unwedged on the fifth day, the Egyptian government spent 1 day checking the canal for damages. After none was found, the rest of the ships were allowed to pass through the canal. The Evergreen ship was then impounded because the ship's insurers refused to pay compensation demanded by the Egyptian government. A settlement was finally reached in July when the insurers and the Egyptian government came to a deal, and then it was allowed to continue on its journey to Rotterdam. The blockage cost an estimated $6.9 billion in trade. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of This Week in History. Tune in next week to find out what happened then. Thank you.
Thanks a million, Conor, for that look at This Week in Business History. Now, coming up in the second part of the programme this evening, in a couple of minutes, just after the break, I'm going to go down a little trip down memory lane as I take a look at the history of some of Dublin's department stores of the past. And after that, then, I'll be talking to Leanne O'Leary from the HR department for a regular look at HR issues from the employer's point of view. This week, the new auto-enrolment pension system that was recently announced by government. So, all of that to come here on Nearby Business.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
From Mount Prospect Diamond Poles.
From 1967 to 1997.
Classic rock, metal, punk, goth, and much more.
Tune into the Grove Radio Show on Near FM 90.3.
Relive those teenage kicks with your favourite songs from the Grove. Listener playlists and memories.
Join Lynn Kavanagh, Jennifer Roach and Brian Tucker every second Friday from 9.30 to 11.30pm as we remember those teenage years.
Dedicated to the memory of DJ Cecil Nolan.
Here at Near FM, we are participating in the community call to help combat the effects of COVID-19. The purpose of the community call is to coordinate community activity and community assistance to where it is needed. We ask our listeners to look out for each other. If your neighbours or relatives are required to stay at home, check with them to see if they need supports. And if you're in that category yourself, don't hesitate to ask for help. Whether it's with shopping, fuel delivery, collecting medicines, or any other necessities of daily life, the local authority helpline is there as a safety net to ensure that everyone is looked after. If you need assistance and you live in Dublin City, call 01-222-8555. That's 01-222-8555. If you need assistance and you live in Fingal, call 01-890-5000. That's 01-890-5000. Let's all stay safe together from all here at Near FM.
The Digital Experience. Missed a program or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM Digital Experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. Visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
90.3. This is Near FM.
And welcome back. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air, 087-6944500, or anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business. Hashtag localbiz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
The history of the department store is inseparable from the history of the modern city, and Dublin is no different. Both grew in parallel with the growth of the middle classes in the cities. Grand magasins began in Paris and were places of conspicuous consumption that provided women with a place to socialise in safety and unchaperoned. While we thankfully still have Brown Thomas on Grafton Street and Arnott's on Henry Street, the city had a unique number of department stores that are now sadly no more. You may have heard of Switzer's and Cleary's, but have you heard of McBurney's of Aston Quay and Todd Burns of Mary Street? These stores were the very epitome of style and glamour in the 19th and 20th centuries. Here, we give you a short history of three of the lost department stores of Dublin City.
The magnificent interior. There are more than 50 departments, a township of shops, each selling goods of the highest quality. The departments employ a staff of about 1,000. There are 34 buyers, each a recognised expert in his own line. Cleary's have nearly everything you need. Men come from distant parts of Ireland to have their clothes made. They come for their favourite tobacco or to be trained as golfers. Women come to have their hair waved and to shop in ideal condition. Men and women come to have their houses furnished completely, or to have excursions arranged, and so on, through a host of daily needs. The bargain basement is the happy hunting ground for keen buyers. You never know what you will find there, but you can be sure that whatever you find is useful, interesting, and a real bargain. Opened only a very short time ago, the bargain basement became at a bound one of Dublin's busiest and liveliest centres. And now for tea, or what about lunch? Everything is smart. The service is quick and deft. The whole cafe is gay and lively. You could not have your tea or lunch in more pleasant surroundings.
First up, Cleary's O'Connell Street. Cleary's may have only closed its doors very recently, but its history is a dramatic tale of the highs and lows of fashion in the city. The store began life in 1853 as McSweeney, Delaney & Co. and was in fact one of the very first purpose-built department stores in Europe, predating even the famous Le Bon Marché in Paris. Cleary's actually replaced five drapery stores on the site and was a large, sumptuously Victorian department or monster store, five stories tall, with six display windows opening onto what was Sackville Street and is, of course, now O'Connell Street. Inside, there was a great centre hall, which was lit by natural light from above, while around it were galleries supported by Corinthian columns that reached up all the way by sweeping staircases. Michael Cleary, William Martin Murphy and James Fitzgerald Lombard established Cleary & Co. and opened for business before Christmas in 1884. Cleary's was still under Murphy's control when it was completely destroyed by fire during the 1916 Rising. An eyewitness claimed to have seen Cleary's elegant plate glass windows melting in the heat of the flames. Despite this, only a few weeks later, in June 1916, the store opened temporary premises in the Metropolitan Hall on Lower Abbey Street and began trading all over again. The store was rebuilt in magnificent Art Deco style and reopened again to great fanfare in 1921. At this time, Cleary sold ladies' fashions and dresses, millinery, men's hunting and shooting items, sports equipment, travel accoutrements, home items, wireless radios and furniture, food, chocolate and much, much more. But it wasn't just the latest fashions you came for. The magnificent store was a destination for entertainment too, with fixtures designed to draw you in. For many, Under the Clock at Cleary's still stirs romantic visions of couples meeting for their dates, and the clock is still a popular meeting point for many. It is where many Dubliners' love stories began during the mid-20th century. Now, as we know, Cleary's is no more. Closing its doors in 2015, it is now set to be a 176-bedroom hotel. Retail and office will see the restoration of the store's iconic features, including its facade, internal staircases, columns and its famous clock. Here's hoping it brings a new chapter of style and romance to the street and to all of our lives.
Menswear.
I'm free.
Now, the second lost department store is McBurney's of Aston Quay. You might remember this hugely popular store as the eventual location of the Virgin Megastore, and now a Supervalue. But until it closed its doors in 1984, McBurney's was one of the busiest stores in Dublin, famous for being only 40 paces from O'Connell Street, as they said in their advertising catchphrase. The glamorous store weathered storms through pre-independence right throughout the war and eventually boomed again after World War II, helped by the business's military tailoring department doing a roaring trade in uniforms. But in the early 20th century, it was a popular destination for the aristocracy of the country who came from all over the country to visit the fashion floors, which had an orchestra playing every afternoon to amuse and entertain the customers. How's that for in-store music? By the mid-20th century, their annual Christmas window displays and visits to Santa at McBurney's became standout memories of the store. Unfortunately, this way of shopping had become outdated by the 1980s, and it was reported in the press that McBurney's, in many ways, is a shop that belongs to another era, as it had been passed out by Pennies and Duns.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone, as she wheeled her wheelbarrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, crying cockles and mussels, alive.
Now, the final store we're going to look at is Todd Burns in Mary Street. You'll no doubt already be familiar with their glorious red brick building with copper dome on Mary Street. It's now the Penny's building, but it was originally built as Todd Burns Department Store in 1905, with the business in existence since 1834. They found fame for fashions and house furnishings, and as was quite often the case, the company was listed in Tom's Dublin Directory as, take a deep breath, silk mercers, shawl men, linen, woolen drapers, tailors, hatters, boot and shoemakers, upholsterers, carpet warehouse men, cabinet makers, haberdashers, hosiers, glovers and jewellers all were involved in the store. It boomed as shopping habits changed in the Edwardian period and became known for its ready-mades and made-to-order business. The hook to this was that you could shop via their catalogue and get your purchases by post, meaning customers all over Ireland could shop there. How's that for being ahead of your time? Online shopping in a different way. Ready-mades were being produced from the mid-19th century onwards, and you could purchase coats, cloaks, shawls and dressing gowns as they were worn loose and would fit a variety of sizes. The ready-made trade gradually expanded to blouses, petticoats and outfitting, the euphemism used for men's and women's underwear to avoid everyone's blushes. And it has grown into the fashion business model of shopping ready-to-wear that we know today. With this in mind, it's interesting to see that a shop providing trend-driven fashion at affordable prices still continues on the same site, in the same location, with Penny's being on that site today. Now, as I said at the start, we thankfully still have Brown Thomas on Grafton Street and Arnott's on Henry Street. But sadly, Cleary's, McBurney's and Todd's are gone. The history of the department store is indeed inseparable from the history of the modern city, and I look forward to the next chapter being written.
I've been north and I've been south and I've been east and west. I've been just a rolling stone. Yet there's one place on this earth I've always liked the best. Just a little town I call my own. A Dublin can be heaven with coffee at 11 and a stroll in Stephen's Green. No need to hurry, no need to worry, you're a king and the lady's a queen. Grafton Street's a wonderland, there's magic in the air. There are diamonds in the lady's eyes and gold dust in her hair. And if you don't believe me, come and meet me there in Dublin on a sunny summer morning.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
And finally now, Leanna O'Leary from the HR department is with me for a regular look at HR issues from the employer's point of view, of course. This week we're going to have a chat about the new auto enrolment pension system recently announced by government. Hi, Leanna.
Hi, how are you?
Very good indeed. Thanks for talking to us this evening on Nearby Business. Leanna, just towards the end of March there, the government made this announcement. Minister Heather Humphreys, I believe it was, made the announcement that they were going to launch this. Now, it's not in place yet, but it's coming. What are the implications for employers?
There are implications, yeah, and there has been a lot of talk. It's been a real conversation generator since this information was released. I suppose before we ask about what this means for the employer, let's have a quick look at why this has been introduced. So, as you say, Minister Humphreys introduced it in March, and she said the introduction of this represents a change from a system whereby employers may or may not make provisions for a workplace pension scheme to one where every worker is going to have access to a workplace pension. Now, this is a big piece of work. There's a lot kind of in it. And from an employer's perspective, this system is not due to be implemented before late 2023, early 2024. And these are design principles that we're going to be talking about today. The full details haven't been finalised, but we do have a good bit of information to get us started. It's clear that many people find pensions complicated. So too many are finding it difficult to save what they need for retirement. And this is reflected in the fact that, you know, 56% of people in employment have an active pension and supplementary pension. Just 35% of the private sector workers have such coverage. And I suppose if we look at it that we are an ageing population, you can understand the government are trying to ease the burden somewhat for the years to come. So I suppose that's the thinking behind it. If we look at it from the employer's perspective, what does it mean? Well, it means that any employee earning €20,000 or more and are between the ages of 23 and 60 who aren't already in a workplace pension scheme, these are the individuals that will become members of the auto enrolment scheme. So that's covering a big chunk of the workforce.
Indeed, it is. Yeah.
So when we look at what's the proposals for who's going to contribute to this? Well, it's the employer, it's the employee, and it's the state. So the three combined are going to be making contributions. So obviously this is a big deal, and it's a big change, and there is a cost involved there. So it's going to be phased in over 10 years. So it's going to go on an incremental basis. So in terms of percentages of what the contributions are going to be, if we look at year 1 to 3, it's going to be 1.5% the employee is going to contribute. The employer is going to have to match that, so 1.5% from the employer, and then the state are going to contribute 0.5%.
Okay.
So that's going to ramp up over the next 10 years, and then in 10 years' time, it will be 6% employee contribution, 6% employer contribution, and 2% state contribution. So it's going to gradually get up to that mark.
Yeah, and I suppose, I love the word auto-enrolment, by the way, just as a slight aside. You know, if they'd used the word compulsory or mandatory, it probably would have been a lot more emotional. But nonetheless, it's the same thing, effectively, because, you know, you're going to have to do this, and from an employer's point of view, if you like, they have to stump up the cash from their side as well, out of their resources. Yeah. Isn't that the way it's going to work?
Absolutely. There is an employer burden here. So basically, for every euro that a worker saves, 233 will be credited in their pension savings account. So employer employee 100% matching contributions, and then the state adds 33%. So absolutely, this is a cost that the employers need to have a think about, and it is coming, and it is, you know, the late next year, early the year after, it is definitely there. I suppose from an employee's perspective, this auto-enrolment scheme, this will pay out in addition to the state pension payments. So just for employees to be aware, this will pay out in addition to that, which is good.
And there is a little bit of a get-out-of-jail card in here. I know we just said there auto-enrolment, compulsory, mandatory, but there is a way, certainly for employees, I'm not sure about employers, but there is certainly a way for employees to opt out at some point, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. Employees may opt out of the scheme in a 2-month window that runs from the end of 6 months after being auto-enrolled. So in simple terms, when this starts, say at the start of 2024, after 6 months of making contributions, the employee can pull out, they can opt out. Also, at the end, when each of the incremental increases to contributions have comes into play, the employee can opt out 6 months after these increased periods as well. So alternatively then, employees may suspend their contributions to the scheme at any time. But here is the interesting thing, and this is where the government are trying to make people make these contributions. At the end of 2 years of being opted out, you are automatically re-enrolled. So you are always going to be drawn back into it. And then, you know, after 6 months of contributions, you can opt out again. But then after 2 years, you'll be brought back in. So you know, it's a constant kind of loop there, if you know what I mean.
I do, yeah. And are you aware or is there any information on an employer opt out, maybe due to the fact that they can't afford it? Probably the most obvious reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I haven't seen that yet. Now, as I said, there are still details that have to be ironed out here, and I would imagine that would be one of them, because I can definitely see for the smaller employer, I can definitely see it being an issue for some of them. 100% I can. And there has to be some sort of, you know, leeway if you absolutely can't afford it. So, and that is one of the things I would imagine that they would be looking into. In terms of other things and why this isn't kind of coming into play sooner is there are still some aspects beyond it, like how this auto enrollment system and other aspects of Irish pension are going to interact with each other. You know, so there is still work to be done in the background on that.
Okay, yeah, so we've a lot of information, but we don't have all the information. But nonetheless, you know, there is, as you said at the start here, there is the worry is that the so few people in Ireland are providing for the future. And I think that's really the motivation behind it.
That's absolutely the motivation behind it. And I do understand that. And, you know, people do find pensions complicated. And the theory behind it is to simplify it. So when these contributions, there is going to be a central processing authority set up, and they're going to be responsible for the operation, the coordination, supervision and development of this system. But in terms of your contributions, you are going to have a choice to invest these contributions in one of four funds, and they will vary in risk and return, the same as with an ordinary pension scheme. And if the employee decides not to make a preference, there's a default scheme that will be there, that will be used. So, you know, it's trying to simplify it. It's trying to get more people into that net because, you know, as a state and as an ageing population, there are implications down the line for the lack of pension that people have for themselves currently.
Yeah, and do you think that'll be a new body that'll be set up to administer this, or will it be somewhere in the Department of Finance or maybe Revenue, perhaps?
Not entirely sure. The Central Processing Authority is a group that's going to be set up to be responsible for the operation and coordination, as I say, of the scheme. And I would imagine, you know, that's more of the kind of ironing out items that they need to do on this. When we talk about, so it's just going back into the contributions into this scheme, interestingly, for high earners, this scheme isn't going to be as tax efficient as if you were in an occupational pension scheme. If you're in an occupational pension scheme, you get tax relief of up to 40%. This scheme, it's going to be less than that. And also, when we're talking about the high earners, employers and the state are not required to make contributions on earnings in excess of 80,000. So from 80,000 per annum. So from a high earner's perspective, they would probably benefit more from the traditional workplace pension scheme.
And do you know if this can operate in addition to or alongside a workplace pension scheme?
No, it would be one or the other. So okay. If you are in a traditional pension scheme, there's no need for you to be a part of this. If you have a PRSA, you would be expected to park your PRSA and contribute to this new scheme. Now, again, this is another element that they are kind of, you know, working on, because details still need to be ironed out on that, about what happened to that pot. At the end of the day, people were, you know, a number of years ago being requested to save for their pensions, and these PRSA funds were there. But also for a lot of employees, there is no employer contribution to that. So that's all still a big question mark for it as well.
Yeah, maybe they'll allow it be converted into this scheme or into this system, maybe.
Yes, yeah, I'd say, I would imagine that's probably maybe the line that they will go down. But I suppose, interestingly, you know, can you add a lump sum into this pension? No, at the moment you can't. So that, you know, so in terms of just general lump sums, no, you wouldn't be able to add it. In the future, would a PRSA be able to merge into it? I would imagine maybe that's the way that they will go, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, and you just there, you mentioned that obviously as an employee, you either are in a workplace pension scheme or in this auto-enrolment scheme. But as an employer, I wonder if, would you be expected to provide both? If that, you know, if people wanted the option of both, would you be expected to provide both? Is there any word on that?
Not that I'm aware of. I would imagine not. You know, the thought process is to have people with access to a pension. There's, I think, 750,000 people they're looking to kind of get in on this scheme. And, you know, they want to make it as fair as possible. So I would imagine that there wouldn't be an onus to provide both.
Yeah. Hopefully not from the employer's point
hopefully
of view anyway.
Not,
it'll be very
not.
Difficult and very confusing as well. Yeah. Nonetheless, I suppose, you know, the motivation here behind this is a good one. You know, you said at the start there, we said a couple of times, there's just not enough people are providing for the future and are enrolled in some form of pension. And, you know, let's be honest, the state pension on its own is probably not going to be worth an awful lot by the time many, many of us get there.
It's not. No, it's definitely not. And it is something that we all need to be kind of aware of. Actually, one interesting thing as well, what happens if you change job. In the current market, employees don't tend to stay in a job for life anymore. We move along. So if you're contributing to this plan, what happens to your pot, if a pot of contributions if you move job? Well, it's a pot follows member type scheme. So if you move from one job to another, that pot will just kind of follow with you in the same way that your tax record does. So it should be easy that way. So it is user friendly for the employee that way, that you can be confident that it's not complicated if you are moving jobs.
Yeah.
So they are making efforts to make it as easy as possible for the employee.
I wonder, would it move with you if you moved into a self-employed situation, or will it be even open to self-employed people?
Again, that's not something that I'm aware of, because it's very much an employer-employee relationship is what they're focusing on. But there is a significant amount of self-employed people within the country, and I think that's a valid question, and I'd be interested in seeing what they come up with on that front.
Yeah, it'll be very, very interesting. And in fairness to government, lots of the initiatives they come up with now do apply to self-employed people as well as employees. So maybe it's a good question for Minister Humphreys if we ever get to chat to her. It's interesting. And as you said, pensions, we don't think about them until we get there, really, or until we get close to them. We tend to like put it on the long finger. But really, it's like the old question: when is the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When is the best time to start your pension? 20 years ago. It's probably the same answer.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of work with graduates at the moment, and they're in the fourth position where pension is offered as part of their benefits package. And the alienated look you get on their face when you're saying about how important their pension is. These guys are graduates, they're 23, 24, and pension is the furthest thing from their minds. And you're trying to say that this is the best time for you to invest in it. And it's a bit of a hard sell, I won't lie.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. This is something that will work. We've a little bit of time. Just give us the time frame again before we finish up, Leanna.
Late 2023, early 2024 is the time frames that they're looking at. So we've got a good year. We've got more than a good year, a year and a half before this is up and running. So it'll be interesting to see the all the finalised details that they need to iron out. It will be interesting to get those when they come.
Indeed it will, and even just our chat there I think has exposed many questions that are left unanswered, so we'll have to watch the space, and we'll have to come back to it over time and see what transpires. Indeed we will.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks a million, Leanna, for taking us through what is a relatively complicated scheme, and hopefully by the time it comes to be in place in late 23, early 24, they'll have ironed out all those issues, and it'll run very smoothly, because it is a good idea to have a pension for the future.
Absolutely.
Thanks a million. Leanna O'Leary there from the HR department for a regular look at HR issues from the employer's point of view. And this week, looking at that new auto-enrolment pension system recently announced by government, announced by Minister Humphreys there at the end of March.
AOB on Nearby Business.
So Dave, we've just time to squeeze in a little bit of any other business this evening, and the first story we're going to look at here is that in the UK, as I'm sure it is here in Ireland, consumer confidence has sunk, or is sinking.
Yeah, well, compared to what we said about Davies giving the outlook rising, UK retail sales plunged more than forecast in March as the cost of living crisis squeezed incomes and consumers braced for higher taxes and energy bills. The volume of goods sold in stores online dropped by 1.4% after falling 0.5% in February. The Office of the National Statistics said yesterday economists had expected a decline of 0.3%. A separate survey for GfK showed that UK consumer confidence sank for a fifth month in April, with British people more pessimistic about the outlook for their personal finances and general economy than during the depths of the financial crisis. Hashtag Brexit, I would say. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Whatever you're having yourself.
Absolutely. Now, aircraft lessors are struggling to get their assets out of Russia and get them back into the air.
Yeah, aircraft leasing companies have launched a multinational effort to persuade safety authorities to allow grounded planes that were returned from Russia commercial without full maintenance records back into commercial services. Declan Kelly, Chairman of Aircraft Leasing Ireland, said the trade body had begun asset preservation study with regulators in Europe and the United States and Bermuda to come up with a mechanism of how to repatriate those aircraft into the global system. Sanctions imposed on Russia following its invasion of Ukraine triggered a global rush among overseas leasing groups to recover more than 500 aircraft worth more than 10 million or 10 billion, should I say, that were stuck in the country. Irish aircraft leasing groups were among the worst affected, with planes worth more than $4 billion. So they had quite a large chunk of that leased to Russian airlines. Lessors have been able to recover 41 planes with an estimated market value of 770 million since the start of the conflict, according to estimates by aviation consultancy Cirium.
It's amazing, isn't it? The far-reaching corners of yeah, what's
big
happening.
For, big for yeah. leasing, yeah. Big for
amazing, leasing, yeah. Now, finally, as they say, Intel Ireland's boss is off to Germany.
Yeah, Eamon Sinnott, the head of Intel's Irish business, is set to depart his role to oversee the development of the chip's giant new manufacturing facility in Germany, which we lost out to, actually.
That's right.
Went to $17 billion being spent in Germany. He's general manager and is taking the job at Merseburg in an interim basis, bringing his experience in development and manufacturing sites to a new project. There are no media plans to replace Mr. Sinnott in Ireland, so it's a leaving their role vacant for the time being. However, they did announce a 12 billion funding to set up and expand manufacturing operations in Ireland. So I think that's a bit of good news, really. He's probably going to come back, but he's also going to probably bring a lot of Irish contractors with him and specialists, maybe design consultants and so on, with him to Germany in that. Now, just to remind you, they employ 6,500 people in County Kildare. What a wonderful employer that is.
Absolutely brilliant. And I mean, it's an amazing amazing story, success story here in Ireland. Interesting, even though we lost out, he gains, he still gets the
and he'll probably bring a lot of business to Ireland via the services and international big contractors, and we're good at that as well.
Yeah. We are indeed. Well, believe it or not, Dave, that is it for this week's edition of Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening, and we will both be live back here next Thursday evening at 6 p.m.
And don't forget, if you have an idea or would like to discuss anything with us, get in touch on Twitter anytime at @nearby_business #localbiz. So for me, Dave Daly,
and myself, Declan Ralph, bye for now. We'll see you soon on the radio.
Thanks
bye
for listening.
Thanks for listening. Bye bye.
From Baldoyle to Beaumont.
Community radio for Northeast Dublin. 90.3. 90.3. Near FM.